A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn Poppleberry, and this is the podcast where my brother Herman and I explore the strange, the specific, and the surprisingly useful corners of human and artificial intelligence. Today, we are doing something a little different. You know that feeling when you walk into a wine shop, and the clerk looks at you with that gentle, patient smile, and you just know they are about to ask you what you are looking for, and your entire vocabulary collapses into the word red. You want something that tastes good. You want to spend less than $20, and you want to get out of there without being enrolled in a seminar. Today, we fix that. This is a bluffer's guide to red wine. To walk us through this, we have, as ever, the all-knowing oracle himself, Herman Poppleberry.
Corn, you are too kind. I am not an oracle. I am merely a man who has, on multiple occasions, confidently swirled a glass of $8 Merlot while making sustained eye contact with a sommelier, and lived to tell the tale. The all-knowing oracle is a title I accept with the same quiet humility I bring to tasting notes, which is to say, very little.
I love that. So today you are going to teach us how to bluff our way through buying red wine. Not how to become a sommelier, not how to pass the Master of Wine exam, but how to walk into a store, talk to the person behind the counter, and leave with a decent bottle and your dignity intact.
This is the social performance of wine knowledge. The real expertise takes years. The performance takes about 24 minutes. And I should be clear, I genuinely do know a fair bit about wine. I am not making up fake facts. I am giving you the shortcuts, the cheat codes, the things you can say that are actually true and will make you sound like you know what you are doing without requiring you to read a single book on viticulture. The comedy is in the framing, not in the facts being wrong.
If I say something you taught me, and someone who actually knows wine hears me, they will not immediately think I am a fraud.
They will think you are a person who has read maybe one article and retained it well, which is the entire goal. You are not trying to fool a master of wine. You are trying to get through a wine shop interaction without the clerk gently steering you toward the bottle with the animal on the label.
I have been that person. I have bought the kangaroo wine.
We all have. And there is no shame in the kangaroo wine. But today, we aim higher. So let us start with the 60-second crash course. If you remember nothing else from this episode, this is the bare frame that will hold everything else up. Red wine, at its absolute simplest, is fermented juice from dark-skinned grapes. The skins are left in contact with the juice during fermentation, and that is where the color and the tannins come from. Tannins are those compounds that make your mouth feel dry, that grippy sensation on your gums. White wine is made by removing the skins early. Red wine keeps them. That is the fundamental difference. Now, in terms of what you need to know to bluff credibly, there are really three categories of red wine that matter for the casual buyer: light-bodied, medium-bodied, and full-bodied. Body refers to how heavy or rich the wine feels in your mouth. Think of skim milk versus whole milk versus cream. Light-bodied reds are your Pinot Noir, your Gamay. Medium-bodied, you are looking at Merlot, some Sangiovese, some Tempranillo. Full-bodied, that is your Cabernet Sauvignon, your Syrah or Shiraz, your Malbec. If you can place a wine in one of those three buckets, you are already ahead of most people.
If I walk in and say, I am looking for something medium-bodied, that alone is a signal.
That alone buys you about 10 seconds of credibility. The clerk thinks, all right, this person has at least heard the word body, used in a wine context, and did not panic. Now, the other axis you need to know is Old World versus New World. Old World means Europe, primarily France, Italy, Spain, Germany. New World means everywhere else, the United States, Australia, Chile, Argentina, South Africa. Old World wines tend to be more restrained, more earthy, lower in alcohol, more about structure and acidity. New World wines tend to be riper, fruitier, higher in alcohol, more immediately generous. Neither is better, but knowing the distinction is a powerful bluffing tool. If you want to sound like you know what you are talking about, you say something like, I am in the mood for something a bit more Old World in style. That is a complete sentence that requires no follow-up knowledge.
That is incredibly useful. So body in old world versus new world. That is the crash course.
That is the crash course. Light, medium, full. Old world, new world. If you internalize nothing else, you now have a framework. And here is why anyone cares. Red wine is intimidating because there are thousands of grapes, regions, producers, vintages. But the people who sell wine for a living, they are not trying to trip you up. They are trying to help you find something you will enjoy. The bluffing is not about deceiving them. It is about speaking their language just enough that they can help you effectively, without you having to say, "I like red wine that tastes good."
Which is a perfectly valid preference.
It is completely valid, but it does not give them much to work with. All right, let us move to the vocabulary. This is the fun part. I am going to give you 5 words and phrases that, used correctly, will make you sound like you have opinions. These are real terms. I am not inventing them. And I will tell you how to pronounce them, because nothing outs a bluffer faster than confidently mispronouncing a word you clearly read in a book once.
I have done that. I once said merlot out loud.
We are going to fix that. First word, tannins. I mentioned them earlier. Pronounced T-A-N. Ends. These are the compounds in red wine that create that drying, slightly bitter sensation on your tongue and the inside of your cheeks. They come from the grape skins, the seeds and the stems, and also from oak barrels if the wine was aged in them. When you taste a wine and your mouth feels like it has been dusted with fine sandpaper, that is tannins. The bluffing use is simple. If a wine is very grippy and astringent, you say, "The tannins are quite pronounced." If it is smooth and soft, you say, "The tannins are well integrated." That phrase, well-integrated tannins, is pure gold. It means the wine is not aggressively drying, and it makes you sound like you have been doing this for years.
Well-integrated tannins. I am writing that down.
Second word, acidity. This one is easy because we all know what acidity is. In wine, it is that mouth-watering, salivating quality. It makes the wine feel fresh and lively. A wine with good acidity feels crisp, even if it is red. When you taste a red wine and it makes the sides of your tongue tingle a little, that is acidity. The bluffing phrase is, "This has a lovely backbone of acidity." Or, if it feels a bit flat and heavy, it could use a bit more acidity to lift it. That is a legitimate critique that sommeliers make all the time.
Acidity is good, generally.
In balance, yes. Too much and the wine feels sour and thin. But for red wine, acidity is what makes it work with food. Which brings me to the third term, and this one is a bit fancier. This is a French word, and it is the ultimate wine nerd shibboleth, pronounced tare, W-A-H-R. It means the complete natural environment in which a wine is produced, the soil, the climate, the topography, the whole sense of place. When someone says a wine expresses its terroir, they mean you can taste where it comes from. A Chianti tastes like Tuscany, a Burgundy tastes like Burgundy. The bluffing use is wonderfully vague. You swirl your glass, you look thoughtful, and you say, "You can really taste the terroir here." Nobody can argue with that. What are they going to say? "No, you cannot taste the dirt." It is a completely subjective observation that implies deep sensitivity.
That is a cheat code.
It is the ultimate cheat code. But use it sparingly. If you say it about every wine, you become the terroir person, and that is a different kind of problem. Fourth term, and this is a specific grape variety, Sangiovese, pronounced Sangiovese. This is the great red grape of Tuscany. It is the main grape in Chianti, in Brunello di Montalcino, in Vino Nobile di Montepulciano. If you want to sound like you know Italian wine, you do not need to know all of those regions. You just need to know Sangiovese. It is medium-bodied, high in acidity, with flavors of sour cherry, dried herbs, and sometimes a bit of leather. Dropping Sangiovese into a conversation about Italian wine is like knowing the password. You can say, "I have been really enjoying Sangiovese lately. Something about that bright cherry character." That is a complete thought.
If someone says, "Oh, which Sangiovese have you been enjoying?"
Excellent question. And we will get to deflection tactics shortly. But the short answer is, you say Chianti Classico, and you are safe. Chianti Classico is the historic heartland of Chianti, and the wines are reliably good and widely available. Fifth and final vocabulary term, and this one is a bit more advanced, but it is a beautiful word, pronounced min, al, itty. This is a tasting note that people argue about constantly, which makes it perfect for bluffing. It refers to a sense that the wine tastes somehow of stones, or chalk, or wet gravel, or flint. It is not a literal flavor, it is an impression. Some scientists will tell you it is not really a thing, that you cannot actually taste minerals in wine. Other people, very experienced tasters, will tell you it is absolutely real. The debate is unresolved. This means you can say, I am getting a lovely minerality on the finish, and if anyone challenges you, you can just say, well, it is a somewhat contested term, but I find it useful. You have now sounded knowledgeable and also diplomatic.
That is incredible. So, to recap my vocabulary arsenal, I have tannins, acidity, terroir, sangiovese, and minerality.
The key phrases. Well-integrated tannins. A backbone of acidity. You can really taste the terroir. Bright cherry character for sangiovese. And a lovely minerality on the finish. If you deploy two of those in a single interaction, the clerk will leave you alone to browse in peace.
I feel more powerful already. So that is the vocabulary. What about the real nuggets? The things I can drop that will make people think I know far more than I am letting on.
This is my favorite part. The real nuggets are small insights that hint at depth. They are not trivia. Trivia is knowing that the world's most expensive bottle of wine was sold for some absurd price. That is a factoid, and it signals nothing except that you read a listicle. A real nugget is something that shows you understand how wine works, not just what it is. Here is my first one. When you are looking at a wine label, the single most useful piece of information for guessing quality, without knowing anything about the producer, is the alcohol percentage. Specifically, if you are looking at a red wine and the alcohol is below 13.5%, it is likely made in a more restrained, old-world style, or it comes from a cooler climate. If it is above 14.5%, it is probably riper, fuller, more New World in style, or from a warmer region. This is not a hard rule, but it is a remarkably reliable heuristic. And the reason it hints at depth is that it shows you understand the relationship between climate, ripeness, and alcohol. Warmer climate means more sugar in the grapes, which ferments into more alcohol. Cooler climate means less sugar, lower alcohol, often more acidity and freshness. So if you pick up a bottle, glance at the label, and say 13%, that suggests a cooler site. I am intrigued. You have just performed a tiny magic trick.
That is useful. I am going to start doing that.
It is the kind of thing that takes 2 seconds to check and makes you look like you have been paying attention for years. Second real nugget. The shape of the bottle can tell you something about the wine inside. This is not universal, but it is a strong tradition. Bordeaux bottles have high, straight sides and pronounced shoulders. Burgundy bottles have sloping, gentle shoulders. Rhone bottles are similar to Burgundy, but often a bit taller and with a longer neck. If you see a wine in a Bordeaux bottle, it is almost certainly a Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot-based blend. If it is in a Burgundy bottle, it is almost certainly Pinot Noir or Chardonnay. If you see a Pinot Noir in a Bordeaux bottle, that is unusual, and it tells you the winemaker is maybe breaking tradition on purpose. The nugget here is not that you should judge a wine by its bottle, but that you can glance at a shelf from across the room and already have a guess about what you are looking at. It is a silent, passive bluff. You do not even have to say anything. You just pick up the right shaped bottle and the clerk notices.
I am silently signaling competence.
The third real nugget, and this one is my favorite because it is counterintuitive. The best value in red wine almost everywhere in the world is not the famous region. It is the region next door. If you want Bordeaux quality without Bordeaux prices, you look at the satellite appellations or the broader Bordeaux Supérieur category. If you want Burgundy character without Burgundy prices, you look at the Côte Chalonnaise or the Mâconnais, just south of the famous Côte d'Or. If you want Napa Valley richness without Napa Valley prices, you look at Sonoma or Paso Robles. The reason this is true is that the famous regions have priced themselves into a premium based on reputation. The neighbors have similar soils, similar climates, often the same grape varieties, but they do not have the name recognition, so they have to compete on quality for price. This is a genuine insight that even some wine enthusiasts do not fully internalize, and you can deploy it in the store. You say, I love Bordeaux, but I am wondering if you have any Fronsac or Côtes de Castillon. I have heard there is great value there. You have just named two lesser-known Bordeaux appellations. The clerk will either be impressed or will simply hand you a bottle and leave you alone. Either outcome is a win.
That is brilliant. So I'm not just bluffing, I'm actually getting better wine for my money.
This is the beautiful side effect of learning to bluff well. The shortcuts often lead you to good decisions. The performance and the substance start to converge. Now, let us talk about deflection tactics. This is the part of the episode where I admit that I have used every single one of these, and I will tell you exactly when and how.
I want the dinner party stories.
A few years ago, I was at a dinner, and the host had opened a very nice Barolo. Barolo is a great Italian wine made from Nebbiolo. I know enough about Barolo to say a few things, but the person next to me was a collector. He had a cellar. He had opinions about specific vintages. And he turned to me and said, "So what do you think of the 2010 versus the 2013? I had no idea. I had tasted neither. I had not even known we were having Barolo until 10 minutes earlier. So I used the first deflection tactic, which is the confident hedge. I said, "There are several schools of thought on that. Some people prefer the structure of 2010, others find 2013 more immediately appealing. I can see both sides." That sentence is completely content-free. I did not commit to anything, but it sounded like I had considered the question carefully. The collector nodded and said, "That is a fair assessment." And we moved on.
You gave him nothing and he thanked you for it.
He felt heard. That is the key. People who know a lot about wine enjoy talking about wine. They are not necessarily trying to test you. They just want to share their enthusiasm. Your job as a bluffer is not to win a debate. It is to keep the conversation moving pleasantly. So the confident hedge is your friend. There are several schools of thought on that. It really depends on the producer. Vintage variation makes it hard to generalize. All of these are true statements that commit you to nothing.
What is the second tactic?
The strategic question back. This is the single most effective deflection in any domain, not just wine. Someone asks you a specific question you cannot answer. You say, "That is an interesting question. What is your view?" People love to give their view. The collector who asked me about 2010 versus 2013, if I had said that, he would have talked for 10 minutes, and I would have learned something, and he would have left thinking I was a wonderful conversationalist. The strategic question back turns your ignorance into their opportunity to shine. It is generous, and it is effective.
That is just good social skills dressed up as bluffing.
A lot of bluffing is just good social skills with a specific vocabulary. The third tactic is the appeal to subjectivity. Wine is subjective. Two experts can taste the same wine and describe it completely differently. This is a gift to the bluffer. If someone says, "Do you get the Cassis and Graphite on this?" and you are getting nothing but red wine flavor, you say, "I can see where you are coming from, but ultimately it comes down to personal taste and how we each perceive these things. You have not disagreed." You have not agreed. You have elevated the conversation to a philosophical plane.
Cassis and Graphite. What is Cassis?
It is a very common tasting note for Cabernet Sauvignon, and graphite is pencil lead, that mineral, slightly dusty note that you sometimes find in very good Bordeaux. Those are real tasting notes, by the way. I am not mocking them. I am just saying that not everyone perceives them, and that is fine.
If I cannot taste pencil lead, I am not a failure.
You are not a failure. You are a person with a different palate. The fourth deflection tactic is the redirect to a related but different angle. This is useful when someone is drilling down on a specific detail and you need to change the subject without looking like you are changing the subject. Say someone is asking you about malolactic fermentation in California Pinot Noir. You do not know what malolactic fermentation is. You do not need to. You say, "That is a fascinating technical detail, but I have to say, what I find really compelling about California Pinot Noir right now is the way different sites are expressing themselves." The whole terroir conversation. You have just used the word terroir, which we established is a powerful deflector, and you have pivoted from a technical question you cannot answer to a philosophical topic you can bluff about. The key is to make the pivot feel like enthusiasm, not evasion. You are not running away from the question. You are so excited about this other thing that you simply must share it.
That is artful. So I have the confident hedge, the strategic question back, the appeal to subjectivity, and the redirect. That is a full toolkit.
That toolkit will get you through 90% of wine conversations. The other 10%, you just excuse yourself to get more bread. Now, let us talk about the one thing you must never do. Every domain has a landmine, a specific thing that will instantly out you as a fraud if you stumble into it. In red wine, the landmine is confidently declaring a specific vintage as universally good or bad. Do not say 2017 was a great year for Bordeaux. Do not say I avoid 2011 Napa cabs. Vintage variation is real, but it is also extremely specific to region, to producer, and to the style of wine. A year that was terrible for Cabernet in Napa might have been excellent for Pinot Noir in Oregon. A year that was challenging in Burgundy might have produced extraordinary wines from the best producers who worked hard in the vineyard. When you make a blanket vintage statement, you are walking into a minefield. An actual expert will immediately know whether you are right or wrong for that specific region and grape, and if you are wrong, the whole facade crumbles. The safe move is to never volunteer a vintage opinion. If someone asks you directly, you say, I tend to judge producer by producer rather than vintage by vintage. I find it is more reliable. That is a real thing that real wine people say. It is also a perfect dodge.
No vintage declarations. What about saying a wine is corked? I feel like that is a thing people say.
Corked is a real thing. It means the wine has been contaminated by a chemical compound called TCA, which makes it smell like wet cardboard, musty basement, damp newspaper. It is a flaw. But here is the problem. A lot of people say a wine is corked when they just do not like it. If you send a bottle back in a restaurant claiming it is corked, and the sommelier tastes it and it is not corked, you have just announced that you do not know what corked means. That is a different kind of landmine. Only claim corked if you are getting that musty, moldy aroma. Otherwise, if you just do not like the wine, say it is not to your taste. That is subjective and unarguable. Corked is objective and testable.
That is a very good distinction. So the landmine is vintage generalizations, and the bonus landmine is misusing corked.
Now let us wrap up with the graceful exit. You have walked into the wine store. You have used your body an old world framework. You have dropped well-integrated tannins and maybe a Sangiovese. You have deflected a question about vintages with a confident hedge. You have picked out a bottle. The interaction is winding down. How do you leave looking like the most cultured person in the room? This is the moment to refer to a related topic you actually know about and pivot away. Wine is connected to everything. Food, travel, history, agriculture, art. If you know about food, you say, I am planning to pair this with a roast chicken with herbs de Provence. I think the acidity will work beautifully. If you know about travel, you say, this reminds me of a little trattoria I found in Florence a few years ago. If you know about history, you say something about how the Romans planted vineyards in this region. The pivot works because it is authentic. You are not bluffing about the thing you are pivoting to. You are knowledgeable about it, and the wine becomes the entry point, not the whole conversation. The other person remembers that you connected the wine to something interesting, not that you failed to name the specific clone of Pinot Noir.
The wine is the opening act, not the headliner.
This is the meta tip I want to leave you with. The real secret to bluffing well is confidence, but not arrogance. Bluff with conviction or do not bluff at all. If you mumble and hedge and apologize, you draw attention to the gap in your knowledge. If you speak clearly, use the vocabulary we have given you, and pivot gracefully when you are out of your depth, you will be remembered as someone who is good to talk to. And that is the actual goal, not to be the world's greatest fake wine expert. To be the person at the dinner party or in the wine shop who can hold a pleasant conversation and leave everyone feeling good about the interaction.
That is lovely. And it is the perfect note to end the guide on. So let me recap what we have learned today. The 60-second crash course. Red wine is fermented juice from dark-skinned grapes, and it comes in light, medium, and full body, and from Old World or New World. The vocabulary to drop. Tannins, acidity, terroir, Sangiovese, and minerality, each with a ready-to-use phrase. The real nuggets. Alcohol percentage hints at style, bottle shape hints at grape, and the best value is the region next door to the famous one. The deflection tactics. The confident hedge, the strategic question back, the appeal to subjectivity, and the redirect. The landmine. Never declare a vintage universally good or bad, and do not misuse court. And the graceful exit. Pivot to something you actually know about, and let the wine be the springboard.
That is a flawless summary. Equipped with this, you can now walk into any wine store, pick up a bottle with quiet confidence, and leave with something you will actually enjoy, without ever once saying, I like red wine that tastes good.
For that, we thank the all-knowing oracle himself, Herman Poppleberry.
I am merely a vessel for the shortcuts. Thank you, Korn. This has been a delight.
You have been listening to My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this Bluffer's Guide, we have more episodes on a range of topics, from art movements to philosophy to how to sound like you have read the classics. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at My Weird Prompts. Until next time, bluff with conviction, and always check the alcohol percentage.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.